We begin the hour, however, with our business commentator today. It is Stuff's business editor, Rebecca Stevenson. A very good morning, Rebecca.
Good morning.
Just before we kick into the supermarkets, I just heard that news at the top of the hour, which really interested me. The government's relaxing immigration rules to help supermarkets cope with labour shortages. Immigrants can now start a job in store without changing their visa details. Students can work more than their usual 20 hours a week. Now, other sectors have been crying out for this, including the rest home sector that we've been talking to that has staff away in isolation following a case of COVID-19, quarter of their staff down, one Hamilton facility, but they face the same restrictions. They can't move an immigrant worker here on a visa, even between facilities owned by the same company. So it will be very interesting to see whether that gets relaxed next as well. But they certainly are one part of the economy that is going flat out, comparatively flat out at the moment, Rebecca. And that's caused some scrutiny.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, we have always been very interested in our duopoly, our supermarket duopoly of New World, which has Foodstuffs, Pack and Save, and those in the Foursquare brands. And then there's obviously the big Aussie competitor, which trades here under the Countdown brand. You know, a lot of people have been anecdotally complaining about what they've been seeing and interpreting as price gouging. You know, I think we had one example sent through of a $13 cauliflower. You know, you've had other people talking about chickens being very expensive. So the supers have certainly been under the gun, and particularly because, you know, we're all absolutely obsessed with the food we can get at the moment, you know, because we're all battling against, you know, the supply chain issues and things that the supers are also dealing with. So we're all obsessed with the supers right now, even more so than usual.
What do you make? I mean, I've seen the $10 cauliflower at a local supermarket. That said, they do suddenly skyrocket some of these fruit and vegetables anyway. Let's just get clear on the law, first of all. Consumers have been making this clear. It's not illegal to put your prices up. It's what you're putting it down to, or what you're explaining it as, that's the key issue. Transparency, yeah?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, obviously, if things are contracted in terms of supply and there's scarcity, the market would usually respond, you know, by making those things more expensive. I mean, and there's possibly been some elements of that, like potentially with that cauliflower and things like that. But yeah, it's definitely not illegal to raise your prices. It's certainly potentially not moral or ethical. And I think anyone who would do that and be exposed at this stage would just have a ton of abuse heaped upon them at the moment. You know, we saw just a slither of that really with The Warehouse, who got sort of ahead of the government a little bit with their announcement saying that they were going to still be open. You know, and consumers around the country thought this was quite grotesque, that The Warehouse, you know, considered itself an essential service. And then, you know, again this morning now we have The Warehouse, who are able to offer some services. So it's just a real tightrope for business that they're walking at the moment, and also for the government. And then consumers are out here, you know, desperately wanting to stock up their pantries.
Well, they after that first move, didn't they, declaring themselves?
They certainly did, yeah.
And this was interesting.
Their share price spiked and then immediately plummeted after they were essentially slapped down by the Prime Minister in a live press conference.
This is an interesting thing as well. We've heard from some unions, all sorts of interesting things. Debt collectors considering themselves an essential service at the moment, which completely flies in the face of, again, what the government is doing, which which is encouraging the banks and via the Reserve Bank, ensuring the sufficient bank funding to actually allow people things like payment holidays and mortgage holidays, to give some payments towards workers. The debt collection side of things can wait is the whole darn message that we're all paying for as taxpayers. And there were other interesting ones as well. Almost the process seemed to be that they were determining they were essential services, when actually what you do is apply, and MBE will be the ones who will register you or not. And that was an interesting issue as well, just assuming you could carry on until you got told no.
Yeah, it's been really tough. And, you know, I can appreciate where smaller businesses are coming from, because a lot of people are watching out there that some operators are not adhering to the rules, continuing to sell online. You know, we're getting inundated with emails of people saying, well, why can't I sell my hairspray from my closed salon when I can see other people are selling online still? So it's been a real problem for the government. And the issue that they've got is they're going to rely on good old NARC New Zealand to enforce this system. You know, businesses are not going to necessarily necessarily out themselves. Some are going to keep trying trading, even though to me the messaging has been very clear. You know, if you are not providing food and those essential services, you should not be open and you shouldn't be running. And I think some businesses really need to take stock of that and kind of take a step back and stop pushing all the time. I mean, MB doesn't have the resourcing to be out there, you know, trying to put on sales through online websites to test who's operating. So, yeah, I think there needs to be a bit of sensibleness from business there too.
Look, one can understand the desperation, the havoc being wrought by this unprecedented shutdown of our economy, yeah. Large parts, most of our economy, is shocking and it's painful. But we come back to the point, and they keep making the point, if the first part of the shutdown can let a result, we can start to get things open. Whole goal. If we do the first 4 weeks, or if it ends up being 5 weeks or whatever, if we do the first part and manage to essentially eradicate or clamp right down on cases, then there's some sort of hope of returning to some sort of functioning. Otherwise, we could be in serious, serious situation for 12 to 18 months until there is a vaccine. That's certainly looking that way with the border closures. So again, you can understand people's desperation to want their exemption, but it's just going to undercut the project.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, Air New Zealand Chief Executive Greg Foran put out a note this morning which said, you know, they think at a minimum they're probably going to cut 3,500 jobs. And that's if we stay in that lockdown period. If we continue across that lockdown period, for businesses like Air New Zealand, sort of the losses and the redundancies and things will increase from there. So, you know, I think we do need to try and do our bit at this point. It is very difficult and very painful, though. You know, we're seeing a lot of people talking about, you know, they've never lost their jobs before. People have never faced redundancies, never had to worry about their bills, you know, never had that uncertainty. And that is a dawning concern to many, many people now. You know, a lot of people are getting letters and things about taking leave, and it's very stressful.
For business owners too, it is so hard to plan when you don't know what the end situation is, and they simply can't be told yet. You know, you're working to 4 weeks, and for many that is challenging enough, even with whatever assistance is available. You've still got some of your fixed costs, you've still got your debt servicing, and also you're asking yourself, how much debt do I want to run up to the bank? You know, these are hard considerations, especially when you have employees at stake, and then you can't get the forward certainty or any kind of forward indications that you need as well. I don't think anyone can underestimate or should underestimate the amount of grief out there right now and the sheer stress of trying to navigate it and try and make these decisions.
I think that's quite right. You know, and we're hearing, you know, the first stories about people making applications for those wage subsidies now. And there's a lot of angst, you know, about people not understanding if they're applying for which part of the subsidy, and then, you know, applying for, you know, big chunks of money, and then in one case getting, you know, 8-10 grand or something like that when they're expecting tens of thousands. So there's going to be a lot of that anxiety moving through as well. And government's going to have to be working, and MB working really closely with these businesses so that they're making that process as easy and as clear to understand as possible, so they're not getting nasty shocks then when they get their subsidy money as well.
Let's look out a bit further. We were talking about the supermarkets, actually. You mentioned the PM slapping down the warehouse. She was pretty clear in the messaging yesterday, also with Dobbin your supermarket, wasn't it? Like, they're conscious. The thing is, Rebecca, this economy is just not normal. You know, we talk about duopolies and we worry about duopolies when it comes to petrol and supermarkets generally. But at the moment, we're almost getting towards a couple of sort of monopolistic sectors, and then the public sector that is still working and or being paid. But the vast majority of this economy is just shut down. And so the behaviours and the checks and balances on things, even supply and demand, the competitive stuff, is just gone. And the behaviour sort of observations are actually going to be very important to ensure we don't end up with really perverse, even more perverse outcomes. Let's look at some sectors that are perhaps positioned to get through this. Some of them will even thrive with big demand for some of their services at the moment. Who are you looking at has got perhaps the best chance of resilience through however long the circumstance is? That we should actually be cheering for at the moment right now, because, Lordy, we need every part of the economy that can to be doing well.
Yeah, I mean, it's the good old farming industry that I think is looking really resilient at the moment. You know, we do have quite, as you mentioned, quite a service driven industry, and all of those sorts of things are shut down right now. Farming is an essential service. Providing food to the nation and exporting and things is still happening. You know, they got good news last week. The government announced that most of their sort of supply and support businesses would also be essential, like vets, feed transporters, things like that. So they're running pretty much as normal from what we understand. And they're looking really good compared to some of those other industries to ride it out. You know, Fonterra's kept its milk price prediction steady. We're still going to be able to export. The only thing that we're going to, I think, is a bit of a concern, as we've seen, is around Rock's lobsters, some of those more luxury items like seafood and things like that. That consumption has dropped really massively, especially out of China. But in terms of dairy and sort of nutrition and food that we make, we think that's looking really bright.
That's true. It has certainly been particularly resilient into the fore right now. Some of the specialist online services as well, probably a lot of them are international, aren't they? Everyone's suddenly flocking to various apps, or and you can see real potential there. There's some New Zealand companies well positioned to tap in on that.
I'm not actually that familiar with the app side. Obviously, we're huge in software as a service, you know, and you're seeing a lot of that value come to bear now with Xero, you know, is cranking out information for its users. And we do have a lot more of those kind of tech businesses that are more behind the scenes and helping to keep business running. And there's a lot of those bigger businesses like sort of Datacom and Catalyst that are actually really huge and really well involved in keeping Parliament running, keeping things running for the country, but you don't really see a lot about what they're up to. But I mean, they're incredibly busy. Nothing's changed for them either.
Let's talk about the data and the capacity. We've had various experts on telling us we have enough capacity to handle everything that's happening at home, whether it's work, whether it's video gaming, whether it's Netflixing, whatever it is. You're beginning to see those peaks on the network creep up and up, however, and there is a limit. Do you foresee the day could come where we might get dangerously close to it?
Terabits per second. We were asking around last week because we wondered whether any of the telcos were doing anything to sort of constrict what was coming through so that more people were getting more of a consistent internet usage. We certainly had complaints coming through last week. You know, Vodafone had a bad day on day one of the lockdown where they had issues with their internet services. And I know because I was trying to Zoom chat with my two sons and our neighbors across the road who had Vodafone, and it just wasn't happening. Certainly more of us are using data, and you've definitely got to be sure that you've cleared other things off the line. You know, if you want to have a nice clear line for something like this or a Skype call and things like that. But the great thing is people are still gaming and having fun online. It's not all just Google Hangouts and work stuff. So good to see that people are enjoying that. But at the moment, seems okay infrastructure wise.
There was quite a good article at the weekend that we're going to follow up on. I think it was on Stuff, actually, but forgive me, I'm not going to be able to remember who it was at the moment. But there is actually ultimately a limit that we've never gotten near hitting in the, is it terabits per, gosh, it's
per second.
Terabits per second, yeah. And the question is whether down the track, if this becomes prolonged, we are at danger of at risk of getting to that. It's hard to know. It might settle down. We might settle down into new patterns. I think at the start there was just a splurge on food stashing and there was a splurge on binge watching, and maybe over time we'll fall into our own patterns over the next few weeks. Who knows?
I think that's true, and I think it is really relevant for a lot of things. You know, like with the supermarket shopping, there's been a lot of sort of, oh, everyone's bulk buying and that sort of thing. But, you know, for example, my family, we're four. We're all home all day, every day, eating like mad the whole time. So I wouldn't say that my spending has been, you know, crazy spending. So a lot of the consumption is shifting around. You know, previously we would have spent on Uber Eats a couple of times a week and things like that, whereas now all that spending is concentrated in supermarkets. Just in the same way, people aren't going to the theatre. So all of that usage and things is all concentrated on the internet.
And in fairness, when people suddenly found out that their university students and their secondary school students were going to be home during the day for an extra meal, that's a lot of extra food right there. As well,
it really
as,
is.
Yeah, as I quite get that panic buying, as well as the fact that there's just something comforting in opening your pantry, and even if it's actually only 5 days worth, there's just something natural about wanting to know you've got enough of the stuff that you either need, or in many cases it's quite funny watching what people panic shop in different settings. The luxuries you really
can. I think the other thing is, I think the other thing is as well, is like this fellow who was getting all his meat taken off him at the supermarket in front of me on Sunday. You know, he doesn't want to come back to the supermarket. He's heeding the message of stay home. You know, so he was saying, you know, he had four sons, he had a ton of meat, and he was like, well, don't you want me to go away? Sort of thing. So there's a bit of that as well, but obviously we have to balance everybody having hopefully enough.
I think the psychic shock of this, the practical thing of, and it's the same with the booze stores going nuts, everyone was going, oh my god, I'm going to go for a month without booze. Like, people just instinctively went wherever their must have was. I think that psychic response and also the practical reality that you were going to have kids piling home made it a bit more understandable. Maybe it'll settle. Mm. And maybe we will start to settle also in feeling like I'm stuck at home all day, I have to video game all day. You know, maybe people will start to, I don't know, discover a book again or talk to each other. Who knows? All of that will happen. I think a big load at the moment is people uplifting really funny, humorous anecdotes and videos to each other and sharing them and for our mental health. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Rebecca, thank you very, very much. Rebecca Stevenson is Stuff's business editor.